Georgia. One was Penn State because I was required by birth to look at Penn State. And the other one was Kansas State University. And I came out here and got a very good reception, but it was a little far from home. Mama wasn't too sure that that was going to be all right for her baby boy to go. So I went down south instead. But I'm glad to be here today and visit with you. Kind of as we get started today and people are filtering in, give you a real quick rundown. The research station that I work at in Idaho, we have about 350 cows. And so that's pretty small by Idaho standards for herd size. We operate at 4,000 feet up to 6,500 feet. Rainfall in our area is somewhere between 9 and 13 inches of moisture, depending on whose story you're listening to. We run a crossbred herd of Hereford Angus cross cows. Since 2008, we've used sex semen to try and generate a majority of those replacement females. That allows us to use more terminal bulls or do whatever they want. So we're a research herd, and so you heard Galen Fink talk about the challenges of being a research herd and try and maintain some side of genetic consistency. And so, you know, if somebody comes in and they've got money and they want to breed to Barzonas for a few years, that's all right. We can do that, but we don't have to have Barzona cross heifers in our herd. So that herd has been there since 2001. We're pretty new as things go. And I came there 10 years ago in 2008. And so what I want to visit with you today is about heifer development. And as I got thinking about this, I didn't realize I didn't have enough time to spend a lot of time with you today talking about all the things that we talk about with heifer development. But a lot of the folks that are here today are going to visit with you about components that you could utilize to create a heifer development system. And so when we talk about systems, when we see systems research, and we do systems research at University of Idaho, and obviously Rick Funson does great systems research. But remember, a system only works great in that particular system. When I got to Idaho, somebody said to me, you know, we want to make this system, this research station, a model ranch. Well, the only model that ranch is for that particular ranch. So if you're operating out of Missouri and Fescue, you're going to have different needs than a guy operating out of western Kansas or us out in Idaho. So what I want you to concentrate on is some of the concepts that we visit with today and some of the concepts that you pick up, and then build your own system as the producers who did an excellent job with their presentations before lunch have told you about. So as we get into this, we've got this heifer. We want her to calve at 2 years of age. We want her to give us a calf every 365 days for 8 to 10 years. We want her to give us a calf that's big enough and healthy enough and quality enough in order that she'll help pay for herself. And then at the same time, we want to make her a cow as cheap as we can. So we've got all these different things that I mentioned that will be talked about today or have already been talked about today that we can put in our toolbox. And today I'm going to visit with you about nutritional management and some of the things that we can do from a nutritional side as developing that heifer. And we're going to focus primarily on energy, protein, nutrition. Dr. Arlington's going to talk to you about mineral nutrition. One of the things we need to do as we think about putting systems together is we need to think outside the box. So Dave Doctor's here somewhere. Dave Doctor's with Select Sires. And so Dave has always thought outside the box. And one of the tools we didn't talk to you about was biostimulation. So if we take a bull and we put him in with a bunch of heifers that haven't started cycling yet, and they're close enough to that physiological onset of puberty, we can induce puberty in those heifers by exposure to the bull. And Dave thought this would be a great idea. The problem with that is either you have to have a surgically altered bull, which is expensive, or you endanger your controlled breeding season. So Dave came up with an idea. What he did was he puts a strap or a chain around the heart girth of a bull. He attaches a mud flap to that strap. And then when that bull mounts that heifer, that mud flap gets in the way, and that heifer gets exposed to the bull without being inseminated. And so I said to Dave, I said, does that work pretty good? He goes, yeah, it really does. You know, we induce some heifers to come into heat. Works great. I said, any limitations? He goes, yeah, you got to check your mud flaps every morning. So we'll think outside the box a little bit today. For the last 50 years, we've done a lot of research that looked at heifer development and heifers at different stages of life, even pre-weaning, a lot of work post-weaning, some work around the time of breeding, and then, of course, what happens to those heifers after breeding until the time they're getting ready to calve. And so that's what we're going to visit about today. Of course, recently we've also learned that what happens to that dam when she's pregnant with that heifer may have lifetime effects on that heifer. And Dr. Vanami is going to visit with you about that, I think, tomorrow on fetal programming. But I'm going to stick today to talk to you about this heifer development in these kind of four stages of life. Rick already addressed this a little bit, and some others have too, that remember, a pregnant heifer is not the same thing as an early pregnant heifer. When we look at these heifers and their lifetime productivity and where they stand, what we really need to focus on is those heifers calving in the first 21 days of the breeding, of the calving season. This is that work that of Dr. Cushman's that you saw Rick allude to earlier. This was the Meat Animal Research Center cattle. And then these were cattle from a composite of commercial producers that they had worked with. And you can see that by about the fourth calving, about the time she has her fourth calf, we've lost half those heifers, even in the group that calved in the first 21 days. But we're down to only 30% of those heifers in the heifers that calved later than that. So we really need these heifers to breed very early in the breeding season. Pre-weaning is one of those places that we don't really think about a lot. She's usually out there with her dam. She's grazing on whatever she's got to do, and we don't really pay a lot of attention to it. But I think it's an area where we have a lot of potential from a management standpoint to maybe enhance what we're doing with these heifers. So research has shown us that those heifers that are heavier at weaning are also heifers that are reach puberty earlier and breed up pretty well in the beginning of the breeding season. And in addition, those heifers that gain the most during that pre-weaning phase are also ones that reach puberty early. So kind of going back to some of the things that Rick said, is maybe what we need to focus on is those heifers that are born early in the calving season because their mothers are fertile. We want to have those fast-growing heifers because probably their mothers are adapted to the environment in which we're working. I mean, maybe we don't want to try and change those growth rates too much by doing any kind of interventions such as creep grazing or creep feeding, although we certainly could do that. One of the things that we have that you guys have used a lot in the Midwest has been early weaning, and looked at that. And certainly out in Idaho, where sometimes we either get burned out of our range or we run into a drought situation, this may be a good thing for us to do. And we've also learned a lot from these studies. What we found, or what others have found, is that on these early weaned heifers, represented by the blue bars, that were fed high-starch diets when weaning occurred at between 70 and 150 days, we see that those heifers have higher pregnancy rates than heifers that are normal weaned, or at least they don't have pregnancy rates that aren't any worse than those normal weaned heifers. So there's some opportunity there, and there's a critical phase during that pre-weaning phase that says to us we can affect lifetime reproduction by what happens to that heifer during that pre-weaning phase. And Rick talked about precocious puberty. And obviously that's sometimes a detriment, where we see heifers that are gained very rapidly during their pre-weaning. We see a lot of those heifers actually hitting puberty and cycling before weaning. That can be a problem for us if the bulls are still out there. But the other thing to note about those heifers is, even though they start to cycle, they usually shut down if they're spring-born heifers in the wintertime. And so those heifers are not necessarily the first ones to come back. So precocious puberty is not necessarily a benefit, but it does happen, and we should be aware of it. So I think the big take-home message on this pre-weaning section is that there is this is a place where we probably need to pay a little more attention than we have in the past. And if we need to because of an odd year, whether it's been a drought or some other situation where our feed source is not what it should be, we might need to do some interventions, because if we don't, we could end up having some negative ramifications on that heifer for the rest of her life. Now, the post-weaning area is one where we've done a lot of research over the years, and certainly that's because as managers, it's the time that we can have the most impact on that developing heifer, and we've got the most managerial control. And so rather than go into a lot of data on all the studies that went on, I'll kind of give you the very big highlights. And one of the first ones is that this was an old study that was done out of Miles City, Montana, at the Fort Keogh Research Station. Obviously, cattle were smaller back then. And it looked at that pre-weaning or the post-weaning gain at a half a pound or a pound and a half. And obviously, if those heifers are nutritionally limited throughout that period, then we have trouble getting those heifers bred and keeping that heifer in the herd. But the heifers that were gained at a pound or a pound and a half a day did pretty well. And as a result of this study and many others, it was kind of that blanket recommendation that you've heard us say in extension for a number of years, that between weaning and breeding, heifers need to gain a pound and a quarter to a pound and three quarters a day in order to be that nutrition doesn't limit their ability to reproduce. And we'll talk about some of the questions that have been raised to whether that's really true or not as we get along later in this presentation. Another thing that's important is, especially if we have large groups of heifers in some of our herds that have 300-400 heifers in a group, if we can divide those heifers into heavy and lightweight groups, heavyweight heifers are just heifers that are higher than the average weaning weight, and lightweight heifers are heifers that were lower. In this particular study, the blue bars represent heifers that were fed together, and the pink or red bars indicate the heifers that were fed separately. And what we see is that certainly those heifers, what happens to those lightweight heifers when they're in with a bunch of big heifers? They get bumped away from the feed bunk, right? They don't get their share. So certainly the heifers that, the lightweight heifers benefit by increasing heifer development and getting those heifers to the right size so they're ready to breed. But the heavy heifers benefited as well, and that's probably because those big heifers sometimes overeat, get overconditioned, and we get some fat heifers. In addition, in this particular study, they were able to lower the feed costs on the heavyweight heifers because they controlled the intake of those heifers more critically. So that's an opportunity for us as managers. The other thing as managers and as researchers we've always been interested in is the way that that animal gains weight, the pattern of weight gain, as Rick alluded to earlier, does that have an effect? This table summarizes four different studies, but the take-home message is simply this. It doesn't matter which way or how that animal gets to the desired weight that we want her to get at the beginning of the breeding season, whether it's a constant gain or a fast, slow gain or a stair-step method like the dairy industry uses now for most of their heifer development, that we are successful in breeding those. And although you see some differences in numbers that look pretty extreme, remember those are fairly small numbers, so statistically they weren't different. And then if we look at a better illustration of that, this particular study that was done by Lynch had two different years, and in 1 year they only allowed 45 days for those heifers to try and catch up, those late-gain heifers, and they realized that that maybe wasn't a long enough period of time. So the recommendation basically is if we do kind of a slow gain, fast gain, we probably need at least 60 days prior to breeding to bring those heifers along in order to have them ready and where we want them to be at the beginning of the breeding season. And again, we'll talk a little bit more about this as we go on and talk about target weight. What we see, if we do kind of these pattern of gains, we can utilize the feed resources that we have better. We can take advantage of weather conditions when it might be more advantageous to put weight on animals. We see decreased feed costs and pregnancy rates that are very similar. So again, the pattern of the gain doesn't matter. One of the things that was interesting to a lot of us is there a specific nutrient that confers the information on energy status or nutritional status to that heifer that says it's a good time to be reproductively active? We've done a lot of research over a number of years, my graduate students and myself. Rick alluded to a lot of the work that he did, a lot of the work that Rick has done over the years looking at high-fat diets. And we see that even though there are some studies here and there that indicate there may be some advantages to one type of feedstuff or another, there really aren't. So from an energy standpoint, it doesn't really matter if that energy comes from starch or a highly digestible fiber or a fat source. We see pretty much the same reproductive response with heifers. And again, there's some indication that maybe fat has a little bit of advantage, but that fat has to come into the diet at a pretty inexpensive level. We also, of course, when different feedstuffs came along, when distillers grains were first becoming readily available in the Midwest, then, of course, we looked into those as well and found that there were no deleterious effects about that. Some mention was made of protein and undigestible protein as well as bypass protein. We've done a lot of research into that. My statement on that is overfeeding protein is usually an expensive thing. We don't see a lot of deleterious effects even with digestible protein as long as there's enough energy in the diet for that animal to get rid of that excess protein in the form of ammonia and excrete it from the body. Certainly, if highly digestible protein was a big problem for us, we'd never get cows bred on good pasture because good pasture runs about 17 to 20% crude protein, and it's a very highly digestible form. Bypass protein, there's been a lot of work. Nebraska's been, and Kansas have been leaders in that area looking at bypass protein. And again, nothing extremely definitive The one thing that's happened recently is there was some work that Mullinex did that showed that heifers that were developed on range that received 50% of their crude protein in the form of rumen bypass protein had a greater longevity in the herd compared to either heifers that received 30% undigestible or rumen degradable protein or in a dry lot with a highly rumen degradable diet. So the take-home message is we've looked for that magic bullet, we've looked for that nutrient that's going to help us out and fix all our reproductive problems, and it really isn't there. Okay, so design your programs around your feedstuffs that you have, what's cheap and available for you and meets the nutritional needs of the heifer. The other thing that Rick talked about earlier today as well is ionophores, whether it be rumensin or Bovatec or Bambromycins, we get that feed efficiency bump, but we also see in many cases an increase in reproductive efficiency as well. So they're certainly worth putting in your post-weaning heifer diets and use those. Take-home message, we've got a lot of flexibility in the way we take care of heifers post-weaning and develop those heifers as long as they meet their target weight, which brings up the next discussion. So as you guys know, there's been a lot of debate and talk over the last several years, especially in the popular press, on whether 65% target weight was better than 55% target weight. So kind of in one camp, we've got Dr. Patterson and Dr. Cora over here. We might call those the Midwesterners. We might call those guys the suits. Okay. Over in the 55% camp, we've got Dr. Funston and Dr. Roberts. They're kind of the Westerners. They're kind of the casual guys in this photo. And what they've done to try and explain this to you is they've stuck the little guy from Idaho right in the middle and said he's going to be the target for all fecal material on this because that's just the way things go. So why has 65% been our recommendation for a number of years? And part of that reason stems from this type of study, but many other studies that showed similar effects, in which Dave and Larry looked at heifers that were either heavyweight heifers by the dark bars or lightweight heifers, the light bars, and that were developed either to a 65% or a 55% target weight, and then that was for British-type heifers, and then these were Brahma cross heifers. And without getting into a lot of detail on this data, although you see some of these lightweight heifers did show lag behind a little bit, even though the British heifers at 55%, what we find in a number of studies is that 65% kind of guarantees us that nutrition is not going to be limiting to those heifers over a wide variety of biological types of cattle, wide variety of environments, and a wide array of situations. So the other thing that Dave found and some others have found was that if we don't continue to develop these heifers properly, those smaller heifers at that target weight of 55% pre-breeding end up with dystocia problems, probably because they have lagged behind in size. Large frame heifers may, because of their growth needs, may not work very well in that 55%. And then that work that we mentioned earlier with Short found that not only did they not breed up as well as the heifers on the other high diets, but they actually experienced greater embryonic mortality. So the argument for 65 was kind of like, hey, it's one of those easy things we can throw out as extension folks and say it works in most all situations for you. It does have some drawbacks. It has a lot of forgiveness. So if we don't meet that 65% target and we're down around 60%, we're probably still okay. The drawbacks are sometimes we have to put in a lot of feed, or as some others have alluded, maybe we've created the wrong kind of cow for the environment that she's got to work in for the rest of her life. And then we risk overconditioning those heifers as well as pasture crash, which I think Dr. Cook will talk about here in a little bit. So Rick and some others said, hey, maybe we should challenge that thinking and think about raising those heifers to a 55% target weight and see if that'll work for us. And this is pretty typical results for that type of situation where we see that heifers that were raised to the lower target weight, fewer of those heifers are cycling at the beginning of the breeding season. But by the time we get to the end of the breeding season, we see no difference in pregnancy rates. And as a result of that, in this particular study, there was $22 less cost per pregnant heifer, not just per heifer, but per pregnant heifer, in these systems. And I think Rick has shown that time and time again, and so has Andy Roberts. And so pretty well that this works under a lot of conditions. One of the keys to this working is that these heifers need to gain weight from the time the breeding season starts until pre-calving, and they need to gain it at a greater rate than heifers that were on the 65%. And if our pasture conditions are good, then that's not usually a problem because they experience some compensatory gain. And so one of the things, Mike, you need to do is make sure that by the time calving comes along, those heifers are 85 to 90% of their mature weight. And if you're in a year where we've got drought or we've got grass that has hardened off and protein content gone down very rapidly, we may need to do some kind of supplementation to those heifers to make sure that those heifers that were developed to 55% mature weight go ahead and finish out and complete and are productive heifers for the rest of their life. So there were some of us that were worried that this might be a train wreck for a lot of folks, but I think Rick and Andy and some others have convinced us that it's probably not a train wreck if we manage things well and we're aware of the limitations. So obviously, I've already talked to you about that heifers need to gain weight. And the other thing is if we get too far below that 55% target weight, we might run into some production problems of various natures. Now, this slide always makes Rick mad because we don't have a lot of information on AI and these 55% target weights. And so in some cases, we've seen decreases in AI pregnancy rates to heifers developed to 55%. But in other cases, we haven't. And in a lot of the research that's been done, heifers have either been developed to 55 and then have had natural service done to them or AI and natural service, and they've looked at early calving rate. So I think we really need more information, but I think early information coming out of Rick's lab would say not a huge worry, but we need to watch that could be a reason for a limitation. So why the argument? It works. It reduces development costs. We have a situation where you can put some pressure on these heifers to be more fertile at a lower body weight. There's not as much forgiveness, and there are some risks, especially with heifers that are straight bred as opposed to a lot of our crossbred cattle that have a higher level of fertility. So with that, I'll skip over this a little bit, but just to say that you need to think about how that system's going to work for you, maybe with purebred herds or herds of small size. The 65 might be a better choice. If we're a commercial herd out there running on range conditions, trying to be the low-cost producer, then maybe 55 is a better choice for us. But we need to make that decision ourselves. The other thing that's going to be talked about is that nutritional stress pre- and post-breeding can have a lot of effect on the ability of those cattle to perform. And then Rick has done a lot of work, and others have done some work that shows that previous grazing experience, having those heifers developed on the same feedstuffs that they're going to see as cows, has a big benefit, we think, in terms of long-term productivity. Kind of to get close to wrapping up, this is a study that Rick's graduate student, Shelley Springman, who's got a poster over here, did a year or so ago, where she looked at heifers are developed on range with protein supplement, heifers are developed on corn stalks with protein supplement, and then heifers are developed in dry lots with either a fairly high level of wet corn gluten feed or a moderate level of corn gluten feed. And what she found is that those heifers that were on the range or the corn residue had lower rates of gain, below a pound a day, ended up being about 60% of mature weight, compared to those heifers that were a pound and a half, kind of like we've recommended, and 67% of mature weight, and then the dry lots were in between. An interesting thing to note is that when they went into that 14-day MGA program and they all got similar feedstuffs, we saw that those heifers that had been nutritionally restricted probably saw a greater increase in energy level compared to those heifers, and so the gains were similar. And then during the breeding season, what she saw were those gains on those heifers were greater for the heifers that were on range or corn residue, and actually those heifers that were over-conditioned in the dry lot showed a decreased gain, but all those heifers weighed about the same when they got to final preg check. When we look at what happened reproductively to those heifers, then we see that there was some slightly lower rates of puberty in those lower gain heifers, but that wasn't statistically significant because they had some huge variations from year to year. But AI pregnancy rates, final pregnancy rates, very similar across all those treatments or all those systems. But then when they looked at 21-day calving rate, those heifers that were in the dry lot. So that stress of being in dry lot added to that low energy intake level caused problems for those heifers from the long run. So the take-home message here is as you design systems for your situation, you need to make sure that you're cognizant that what you might do or changes you might make may have positive or negative effects for you. I think one of the other take-home messages from these studies and a lot of the studies that Rick have been doing is we probably need to think more about developing our heifers on pasture or on range rather than on in a dry lot situation if we can. And I think Dr. Cook will talk more about that as well. Finally, kind of to wrap up, what do we do with these cows after they calve? And again, one of our recommendations has been that we need heifers to calve at body condition score 6, that we see greater rebreeding rates in those heifers. So if you're having first calf heifers that are having problems rebreeding, you need to kind of see where your body condition scores are on those heifers at calving and pay attention to your late gestation nutritional management on those heifers. The other thing is it kind of brings up both what Galen and Rick said. Are we creating heifers that have to have a body condition score 6 in order to rebreed as 2- and 3-year-old heifers? And so we need to make sure that that isn't the situation. Some work that just came out in New Mexico would say that in well-adapted cattle that were generated from well-adapted dams, we might be able to go to a lower body condition score at calving as 2-year-olds and get along very well. Similar study just showing, or similar table, that shows you that in these heifers that are in good body condition at calving, we see a high percentage of those heifers becoming pregnant early in the calving season. So to kind of wrap up, we really want to select those early born replacement heifers, those heifers that came from dams that are well adapted to our environment. We want to monitor that pre-weaning environment and think about that as a management opportunity for us, and a place that we might be able to exert some management control from time to time when conditions warrant. We want to choose a target weight that fits your operation. So I'm not going to stand up here and tell you that 65 is better than 55. You've got to make that decision for yourself. I think we've got some pretty good data out there. So Rick, now I've only told 75% lies instead of 50% lies. So develop a post-weaning nutritional plan that utilizes the feedstuffs and that are available to you and is balanced. Work with your extension professional, work with your consulting nutritionist, come up with a good nutritional plan, and Dr. Arthington will visit with you a little bit more about minerals. And then feed the cow for the environment. Feed that heifer, develop that heifer as much as possible. One of the things that we've done at the research station is we no longer feed grain to heifers unless they're in the GrowSafe system for feed efficiency trials. And then use the reproductive technologies that we've talked about today, whether it be reproductive tract scores, AI, synchronization, and those other things. And I think you'll be very happy with the system that you come up with for your ranch for developing heifers. And with that, I'd like to thank you again for the opportunity of being here today and visiting with you.